Wells Fargo Bank, N.A.
Well, I'm not quite sure what happened there, but this is WNF 88.5 in Tampa, Sarasota, Clearwater, Community Conscious Radio. Hi, I'm Mary Glennie.
And I'm Arlene Engelhart, and you are listening to From a Woman's Point of View. We're so glad you're joining us this morning, and we're hoping you're making your plans for the long weekend. We know some of you are going up to the Folk Festival, and many of you will be commemorating loved ones that may have been lost and so forth. But whatever you do, we hope that you enjoy it. And now you don't have to wait till 9 a.m. to hear Democracy Now! You can hear it every morning at 8 a.m. on our HD3 channel, The Source. You can hear it online at wmnf.org/listen. That's Democracy Now! Weekday mornings at 8 a.m. on WMNF's The Source and 9 a.m. on our main channel. And it's replayed on The Source at 5 p.m. every weekday afternoon.
Okay, well, I'm just going to play this little promo and then we will get started. Whoops, there we go.
The US Festival was a huge party Memorial Day weekend in 1983. With the top bands of the early 80s. WMNF is celebrating the 35th anniversary of the US Festival with a Memorial Day weekend tribute event. Two nights, new wave, country, rock, and heavy metal. We will have it all. Friday, May 25th at Skipper's, and Saturday, May 26th at Janice Live. Go to WMNF.org events for the times and band lists.
Ooh, that sounds like some terrific music. And it's a really terrific event in this Memorial Day weekend. Wow, what are you going to do this weekend? Well, stay out of the rain, I hope, because it sounds like it could be very, very rainy. But, you know, this is a time we think of the fallen soldiers, so to speak, who gave it all for this country. And with that in mind, particularly what's happening right now, I'm going to put this music on because the second part of the show, we're going to be talking to Lisa Heslov, and she is the director, co-writer, producer of just an extraordinary documentary that we're going to be covering, and it's going to be seen as part of Independent Lens, a very terrific documentary series on WEDU, and it's going to be Monday night, Memorial Day, 10 o'clock, and it's going to talk about women veterans, and among many other things, you're going to find the stories, you're going to find the people absolutely amazing. But I think you're going to be very troubled that any one time there are about 55,000 female homeless veterans in this country. So what is happening, etc. Well, among many other things, the stories you will follow in this documentary, these women are amazing. They really are. And we'll get to that. But the soundtrack is absolutely outstanding. And so just listening to that good music, I thought I'd play a little bit of that soundtrack. But also then, domestic gag rule that Trump and the Republican Party absolutely cannot stop hounding women and trying to, send them all to Gilead, you know. But anyway, let's put this music on because this is part of that soundtrack by Lisa Perry, actually, is in charge of the soundtrack. And this is Salute, and I think kind of in so many ways all of us are kind of being asked to stand and salute, yes, sir, no, sir, whatever you say, sir. So anyway, I'm going to put this on, and then we will come back with Jessica Mason Pico.
Looking.
dancing with me, let me see your hands. Stand up in the loop, get your killer heels, sneakers, pumps, or lace up your boots. Representing all the women, salute. The ladies all across the world, listen up, we're looking for recruits. If you're with me, let me see your hands. Stand up in the loop, get your killer heels, sneakers, pumps, or lace up your boots. Representing all the women, salute.
Representing all the women, you can pick up your gun and shoot, but don't try and control your body. So anyway, I was able to catch up with Jessica Mason Piclo, and as you probably are aware, that they're still after Planned Parenthood. Domestic gag rule, Reagan revisited. Let's give a listen to what Jessica has to say. Well, I am so happy to welcome back to the show that legal analyst extraordinaire. She is a legal and law policy expert with Rewire, that just terrific website that you really, I think, should go to catch up on everything that's happening, not just with women's reproductive lives, but pretty much across the board of areas that are affecting women. And so, Jessica, I am really happy to be talking to you today, because the domestic gag rule, Ronald Reagan returns, and it's they are intending totally to get rid of Planned Parenthood if possible.
Yeah, that's certainly one of the goals with the domestic gag rule that was announced, is to get rid of Planned Parenthood and really any family planning clinic that offers comprehensive reproductive health care services, including those that don't even offer abortion.
Well, you know, Henry Hyde, the man just continues to haunt women, I think, not just here in this country, but abroad. You know, the Hyde Amendment, 73 and then 76, what got applied to no federal funds for any United States abortions. But something like Planned Parenthood, et cetera, they've been doing that with private funding from the get-go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that's one of the sort of big lies in the domestic gag rule here, is that federal funds already prohibit, or federal law already prohibits federal funds from going to cover abortion care, and requires that all of that be segregated out. And so what the proposed gag rule does is, A, ignore that reality and reinforce a anti-choice lie that says there's taxpayer-funded abortions, and then also really drills down even deeper, and for those states that explicitly protect abortion funding through either state court actions or constitutional amendments, attempts to override that as well. So it's really sweeping, and you're exactly right. I mean, this is the worst of the Reagan administration coming back to haunt us.
Well, and I'm thinking, you know, it's kind of the football. The Republicans come in, so they reinstate the Hyde Amendment, the gag rule internationally. The Democrat come in, and they rescind it pretty much the first day in office. And the same thing with Trump, the first day in office, bang, back goes international. And you know, when we think of maternal mortality, when we think of some of the problems internationally, this must just be impossible. possible for any of these countries to try and really get any kind of, you know, policy, standardization of policy. It's just, and also it kind of undermines the whole effort for women to be in control and the necessity of their family planning. And so somehow to bring this also back to the United States, it's kind of discouraging.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't kind of undermine this. It's the entire point is to completely undermine it. I mean, in the rule that's proposed by the administration, they say very clearly that abortion is not considered part of comprehensive family planning services, that family planning is preconception only. And so what they call post-conception care doesn't fall within the realm of services that Title X clinics would be facilitating. And so that in and of itself, I think, is a marker that what the goal for the right here is to make it impossible for women to control their fertility in a way that is meaningful to them. And that really, if you are within the age spectrum of when you could potentially become pregnant, that the right wants the state to consider you always potentially pregnant, whether it's in how it delivers healthcare services to you or whether it's how the police and law enforcement interact with you and surveil and you know, arrest pregnant people for things that are not otherwise crimes, like we've seen happen in Tennessee. So it's really comprehensive, and this is one piece of that.
Well, and it's not even totally formalized, as I understand it. And supposedly there's allusions that Trump has said, well, we're not going to forbid them to mention abortion, but they're making it very clear it has to be separate physical facilities. And tell me, I read that Jared and Ivanka tried to talk to Cecil Richards when she was head of Planned Parenthood, that if they would just drop abortions, that, you know, all the funding would be continued for Planned Parenthood. Uh-huh. And Trump said during, you know, when he ran for president, that they did an awful lot of good and necessary services. And so I think also part of this whole game is ambiguity.
Yeah, I mean, I don't believe Jared and Ivanka for one minute. I mean, the Pence administration was going to defund Planned Parenthood regardless of what Jared and Ivanka were telling Cecile Richards. And I think Cecile Richards probably knew that. I mean, the idea is, you know, that her refusal to buy into this mythology that abortion is somehow not health care and not part of reproductive health care. I mean, this is part of and parcel of a rhetorical attack on health care that we've seen from the right that is included in their efforts to repeal the Affordable Care Act. These are all sort of parts and parcel of it. And so I think you're right that there's some ambiguity, but I also think that this is an administration that just can't be trusted beyond just who they have really sort of basically shown who they are. And we have an executive in chief who is more or less an admitted serial abuser and a vice president who has said, you know, and tried to, while he was governor of Indiana, enact the worst policies that the Trump administration is bringing out on the national scale here. So this is, I mean, I'm often on your show talking about how things are bad, but when it comes to the gag rule, I really am concerned that we're not sounding the alarm enough on the impact that this kind of attack is going to have.
Well, and I'm also thinking of that, you know, the new head of HHS, Human Health and Human Services, Alex Azar. He is absolutely opposed to women and abortion. And I believe, isn't he operating under the premise that actually under Trump, he's serving and protecting Americans at every stage, beginning at conception? Isn't that his attitude?
Yeah. Yeah, that's absolutely it. And so, you know, as I've been on your show and talked about in the past, you know, I refer to this as sort of creeping fetal personhood, this idea that the right is inserting into our public discourse and our law whenever possible, the idea that a fertilized egg has the same full legal status and panoply of rights as an actual born live human walking the face of the earth right now. And so this is really what, and Azar is absolutely part of that. So it's no surprise that we've seen some of the most extreme policies attacking fundamental rights come out of Health and Human Services.
And also, isn't it kind of ironic, don't you think, Jessica, that here on I think this Friday, Ireland is going to essentially vote on the Eighth Amendment, which essentially does give fetal personhood. And so they are going to be voting on that. And here in this country, we are definitely trying to quietly creep toward the same thing. I think it's kind of ironic.
Yeah, it is. I mean, you know, I think it shows the power of the extreme conservative wing of the Catholic Church in setting domestic policy in the States and domestic policy abroad as well in other countries. And also, you know, I think we're going to see in this country the religious right be less quiet about their efforts to enshrine fetal personhood into law. You know, again, this new gag rule makes it very clear that family planning services funding will go to institutions that sort of believe in life begins at conception. So not only is this a way to gag abortion providers, but it's a way to open up the pipeline of government resources to religiously affiliated social service entities.
But I wish people would read some of the cases that Ireland has had. The reason this Eighth Amendment is up to be repealed, you know, is because of the Indian woman who wasn't Catholic, who was practicing, you know, with her husband in Ireland. And they refused when she obviously was having, you know, a miscarriage. And they thought they detected a heartbeat. And so she ended up dying 4 days later of septicemia. And some other really horrible but real life cases that really does happen. And I wish people would read about that, because real life is very different than what they try and make it. And also, I'm thinking of the states, and I'm thinking of Iowa and the heartbeat. And I really hesitate to even say the heartbeat law, because there is no heart. So at that stage, you can't really say heartbeat.
Fetal heart tones is how the doctors describe it, because you're absolutely right. It's a collection of cardiac cells. You don't have those cells organized into an actual organ yet, as science recognizes it.
Yeah, and it kind of reminds me, though, of all of the havoc that with partial birth, if you remember that abortion, you know, and the terminology is really important here. And so I look at Iowa and I thought, no, there's no heart. So you don't have a heartbeat. But also, I follow regularly your website, and I'm following the roundup of states. And it's quite obvious that, you know, they're trying to back it up to 6 weeks. They want Supreme Court challenges, if you will. And I think that they're pushing just as hard as they can to overthrow Roe versus Wade, or to essentially make it 6 weeks or less.
Yeah, I mean, they're very clearly going for any opportunity they can to eradicate Roe v. Wade, whether that is a specific ruling that overrules it, or if they can get the court to bite on what I would call a Trojan horse that has the effect of overturning Roe v. Wade without the actual messy political implications for Chief John Roberts and the other justices.
And if I can go back to Planned Parenthood for just a bit, because, you know, the good they do for over 4 million women, and let's face it, most of these women are lower income, or they're young college students, et cetera. They're people that really need Planned Parenthood, and I think, doesn't Planned Parenthood provide family planning for about 40% of the people under Title 10? And even though they only have 13% of the facilities, they really are the server for these women.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I was an uninsured and broke college student who went to Planned Parenthood as my primary healthcare provider way back in the 90s. This is, you know, and I am so far not unique and alone in that experience. And this new rule would make that really almost impossible. By the way, they do a lot with the definition section of low-income families to try and eradicate the ability of unemancipated minors to access reproductive healthcare on their own, among other things, and really do a lot to make it difficult for single young women to really be seen in an affordable fashion at clinics that can also provide them contraception. And so this, I should point out, and I'll be writing about this in more detail, is, of course, on the heels of conservatives attacking contraception coverage in the private sector as well through attacks on the Affordable Care Act and in the Hobby Lobby case and the Little Sisters of the Poor, these cases that I've talked about on the show a whole bunch with you, Mary, that this is really a way for the government, the Trump administration, to try and block in the public sector the way that that they are trying to block in the private sector women from accessing affordable, comprehensive reproductive health care.
Well, you know, and Jessica, we've talked many times, and to me, it's just appalling and amazing that this continues and the fervor, and you know that what do they have against women? What are they so afraid of? And at the same time, I'm looking at that Supreme Court, and I know you're probably going to write about more about, you know, the decision that just came down about forced arbitration, etc., and really taking a significant tool away from working people, not just women. And I really am so worried, and you know, I thought that Justice Ginsburg really, you know, when she gave that oral presentation, which she doesn't do, but this is really troubling, and it's not only a Gorsuch, it's the ramrodding they're put through federal judges with McConnell and company. I mean, this is really a dangerous time to me, and it's going to be for many, many years.
Yeah, the federal judiciary is really, it's in bad shape as a result of the election. Trump and the Republicans have appointed something like, you know, or they have filled at this rate so far in an eighth of the all of the open federal judiciary seats that were left in the Obama administration as a result of Republicans refusing to hold hearings, not just on Merrick Garland, but on a whole panoply of nominees. And so really what we've seen for progressives is a loss of the federal courts for a lifetime. The judges that are being appointed are not just ideologically really conservative, they're also very young, and so they're going to be on the bench for a long, long time.
Well, and, you know, Patty Murray and Susan Collins and others are fighting for Planned Parenthood and really, you know, saying how important these issues are. And I think that they were trying to use Maine as an example that health clinics could take this over from Planned Parenthood. And I think the estimates that came out of Guttmacher Institute were like 63% to 70% increase in patient load for these clinics. And they aren't even equipped to deal with these issues. And so what do you think people should do?
Well, I mean, I think the first thing that they should do is call their elected officials and let them know that they absolutely do not support this action. And then we are in what's called the notice and comment period on the gag rule itself. And so what that means is that the federal government, under the process for rulemaking, has to hear from the public. So write in and let them know that you don't support these changes, that you don't believe that the federal government should be prohibiting doctors from discussing with patients the full range of their reproductive health care options, that they don't believe that unemancipated minors should be mandated to have their parents involved in every decision, including those which might put their life and health at greater risk. So this is a really big deal, and we have some action moments that we can right now. And so will that stop it? I don't know, but it's at least something to do and to put the pressure on. And, you know, our advocates out in the field are doing a lot of great work, bringing lawsuits to block the worst of the administration's actions. And I would hope to see some here too, depending on what ultimately comes through. But, you know, right now, even when it's difficult and discouraging, staying engaged, I think, is the most critically important thing that we can do.
And also, looks like we need to fight even harder for the ERA.
Yes.
Well, Jessica, we've covered quite a few areas. Were there any areas that you particularly wanted to mention we didn't reach?
Wow. There's always so much. But really, I appreciate the coverage that you provide for your listeners and so much of this great context, because you're absolutely right. This is not a new fight. This is something that we lived through in the Reagan years. And we will live through this one also. But I just, again, thank you. And I appreciate the work that you do, Mary.
Well, I so appreciate Rewire. I really recommend it. You've got just terrific writers, good minds, and you're exploring so many areas that I say are not just reproductive areas. And I really find I cherish the information on your site. So you keep up the great work. And I like those podcasts you're bringing
great.
All the way around. You're really reaching out. And so, and women's rights are human rights, and human rights have got to be women's rights. And so we've got to keep reminding ourselves of that. So anyway, Jessica Mason Pickle, thank you so much again for giving us this time. And you do take care.
Thank you so much, as always,
Mary. I see. Well, Jessica, don't you find Arlene that she's so smart? She explains it so well. I really find her really just a treasured resource.
Oh, she's terrific. And, you know, there's so many resources, as you both mentioned, on Rewire. I just posted Trump's domestic gag rule will silence shame and stigmatize women. Or I posted Trump praises his war on reproductive rights at anti-choice gala, an article that was posted on Rewire, I believe, yesterday.
You know, thinking of Memorial Day and people who have given, you know, everything, they've given their lives for this country and for what it stands for. And so somehow to me, it's really depressing, really, that we're fighting, to me, this incredible battle right now for women. You know, and I'm thinking of Lincoln. I'm thinking of the Gettysburg Address. All men are created equal. Well, you know, we realize with the Declaration of Independence and fighting for the vote that women are not necessarily included in that. And so if you do not have full autonomy of your body, you are not a complete human being with all the rights of citizenship. And that's just the way it is. And, you know, I don't know about you, Arlene, but, you know, there was a marvelous moment that I think a lot of us felt, not just in this country, but in the world, when the Berlin Wall went down and the communist country with Gorbachev peacefully came down, et cetera. And it's almost like there was a new dawn, a new sun could come up, and people were so excited, and whoom, we found the dark forces of the Rumsfelds and the Cheneys and the dark empires, etc., really rose. And it's kind of like right now, you get the feeling with the internet, with a whole different sense of self and nervous system, etc., that we're in the same kind of moment, if you will. And it's almost like trying to stand in, you know, the volcano in Hawaii and keep that from exploding. But somehow you have very dark forces that are trying to do this, and it's too often centered on women's bodies, on women's lives, and so it's a very, very, very important fight, and we've got to win this one. And you are listening to WMNF Tampa, Sarasota Clearwater, Community Conscious Radio, and as I said, there's a really wonderful documentary, particularly in this Memorial Day. It's going to be Monday, and it's going to be at 10 o'clock on WEDU. And it's Serve Like a Girl. And I'm going to play the trailer, and then we will come back with the interview with the director, the co-writer, Lisa Heslow. And so let's listen to the trailer first, and then we'll get into the interview.
Now be able to contribute to our mission in ways they could not before. They'll be allowed to drive tanks, fire mortars, and lead infantry soldiers into combat. Everything else that was previously open only to men.
Allowed in combat? What do you think I was doing over there? I wasn't playing Legos. I wasn't sitting at the FOB pushing papers. Like, I was in a war zone.
Flying 50 feet over enemy territory.
I was always attached to infantry and armor.
I was a power generator mechanic.
I'm a veteran, 11 years military police. The stuff that we do for veterans in the United States sucks.
So I get to the VA and I tell them, you know, I'm a veteran. And they said, well, we only have services for male veterans. I go from a lieutenant in the Army, and in the blink of an eye, I'm homeless, and it's strictly because of my gender.
We also serve. We also die for our country.
Like, our guys aren't the only ones coming home with PTSD.
So we're going to create this event, and we're going to create this spokesperson who will let people know what the issues are for women veterans.
Welcome to the Miss Veteran America competition.
We're part of something bigger than ourselves.
Miss Veteran America is a voice.
We are not second-class veterans. We are not damsels in distress. We are warriors.
This is the woman that I want representing my country, the woman who was willing to raise her right hand and die for it.
And I am so happy to welcome to the show Lisa Hesloff, and she is a director and a co-writer of just an extraordinary documentary that's going to be shown part of Independent Lens. It's going to be this Monday, May 27th at 10 o'clock on WEDU here in Tampa, Florida. So Lisa Hesloff, welcome so much to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a real pleasure to be here.
Well, I thought being so close to Memorial Day that I think your documentary is being shown at a very good time. And Serve Like a Girl, I found it really just an absolutely wonderful and in many ways an astonishing film.
Thank you so much. Well, I wish that you just were with us all the time.
Well, I'm curious because this is just a wonderful film, and it's about a event, actually the MS, Veterans American Beauty Pageant, but these are all service women, and it's being done actually to support the homeless women veterans in this country. And I was actually horrified to realize that there are something like 55,000 homeless women veterans in this country?
Yeah. It's a pretty eye-opening statistic. And, you know, I think, well, first of all, it's a competition, not a pageant. So if you ever do get to meet any of the veterans and you do say the word pageant, they're going to make you drop down and do 10 push-ups.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I've done probably 40,000 push-ups so far, because I always flip and say the word pageant. But, It's an astounding statistic, and I think that, you know, there are so many different types of homelessness, and I think, you know, these women transitioning back into society is quite difficult, and, you know, it's our belief that a couch isn't a home, a closet isn't a home, and living in your relative's garage isn't a home, and when I learned how high these numbers go at any given time, it was just astounding to me.
Well, and Jasmine Booth, and luckily, actually, having followed the women you followed in this in this competition, that I can see why they would have a lot of trouble readjusting. And Jasmine Booth, here you have she's a lieutenant in the Navy, and she's training these people to be deployed in Iraq. And she develops symptoms, but she ignores them because she's an officer. She's got a lot to do, and it would look like she was just trying to get out. And then, wow, after she is deployed and comes back, she gets a really serious diagnosis. So in a very short time, this very accomplished lieutenant in the Navy training people is discharged after having a huge battle with cancer. She finds out she has cancer.
Yeah. Well, she's actually a major now. And Major Booth served in the Army. And she had been serving for, I think, 11 years. And she was about to be deployed. And she found out that everything that she owned had been destroyed in Hurricane Katrina. And so she was given 2 weeks to go home to salvage her stuff. And she knew that, you know, there was nothing to salvage. So she had not been feeling well for a few months and was afraid to complain and did complain and was told basically to sort of buck up. And I think she was afraid as a woman to be judged for being weak or sick. And so she took that opportunity when she got the 2 weeks leave right before she deployed to go back to Louisiana. And she ended up going to see a doctor, and she found out that she was diagnosed with stage 3 cancer. And so she was basically discharged into the streets. She ended up homeless for about 6 months, and and that gave her the sort of strength and the fortitude and the passion to start Miss Veteran America and to, you know, really dedicate her life to helping women who were suffering the same as she had. And it's a really wonderful story, and she's a hero.
She's a powerful woman, but they are, all of them are. And tell me, how did you find out about this competition?
You know, I had been a producer before I started my organization for at-risk children, and sort of kind of gave up my career when my husband's career as a producer and writer took off. And went back to school and, you know, ended up, and then I wanted to produce again, so I was actually having lunch with a friend of mine who's a journalist who had spent a great deal of time in Iraq and Afghanistan, and we were getting up to leave the lunch, and she just turned to me and she said, "Did you know there's a competition called Miss Veteran America?" And I just thought, that's it. That's my next project.
Well, and they are just amazing women. And what, they have like 600 applicants, about that many, and they choose these 25. And
yes.
And the women that they chose, each one of them has such an extraordinary story. I fell in love with, was her name Nicole Allridge from Ohio?
She's from Alabama. She's originally from Georgia, but from Alabama, yeah.
But even more so, her mother.
Yes. Ginny is very... she has probably the best comedic timing of any human being I've ever met in my life.
Well, and we realize, and as we follow this competition, et cetera, that she's suffering PTSD. And, you know, I really almost hesitate to say, but I think it's such an extraordinary story that she has, that there she, her father had a garage, you know, a mechanic, et cetera.
Yeah.
And he would never let her, you know, play around with the cars, et cetera, because that's not what girls did. So when she joined the military, she wanted to be a mechanic. And so she became that, but then it put her in a position right up in the front lines. And I thought some of the most powerful things in those movie, in that movie, when she was saying that, you know, that they saw some terrible things and they saw death,
yeah.
and she couldn't take it anymore, so she was back at her bunk and she's just saying and crying to herself, "I can't take this anymore," and she hears her father's voice.
Yeah,
and they obviously had a really close relationship, and I hesitate to say it, but I think it's so extraordinary that when she gets back, she has terrible PTSD, and she has trouble dealing with things, and she keeps having this horrible nightmare that she's going to be attacked in the middle of the night in her home and killed, and it's just awful, and her father ends up being killed in just that way. And every one of these women have stories just this powerful. And there we see her going off in her motorcycle at the end. But they're almost jaw-dropping stories.
Yeah, and she's going to get back on the motorcycle because we're making a 6-part docuseries about solving her father's murder.
Oh, I'm so glad. I'll have to find... Now, where can we pick that up? Because
we're working on it now. We're working with a great company called Radical Media, and we're just putting the teaser and all the elements together, and so I'm just so excited. You know, it's sort of my gift to Nicole to be able to finally bring this to an end.
And
so we'll let you know.
Well, please do. And then you have another woman, Rachel Engler, and what a gorgeous human being she is in every way.
Inside and out.
Yeah, what a beautiful dancer. And she was the Washington Redskins cheerleader. But also an anesthesiologist with the Navy. Her parents are both Navy veterans of 20 years. And it's just amazing. And what she does, and then we see her in the front, et cetera. And she's essentially in charge of this outreach clinic, you know, and the thing she goes in where she goes to make a liaison with the women and children, and so she can't wear her helmet, she can't wear her armor, so she's really exposed. But you can see how beautifully she relates to these people and how much particularly the children relate to her. And then when she comes back, this beautiful athlete, you know, dancer all of her life. We find out she has myasthenia gravis, and we watch her being treated. And so powerful, because in the competition, they have to have a talent. So she's, of course, going to dance. And she, it is so powerful when she is just hoping her body can get through this dance because it hasn't been able to. And, you know, you just, and you kind of wondered, you think, wow, being in that front in Afghanistan, did that in any way relate to her getting a myasthenia gravis? I mean, in other words, I repeat, every single one of these women just have just amazing stories.
Yeah, and they do. And I think, too, it's, you know, I think a lot of people, and you know, you can't blame them, really sort of associate women in the military with these sort of really tough, you know, exteriors and these sort of warrior, you know. But, you know, they're also, you know, badasses who serve in the military, these women who are beautiful and feminine and stunning. And like I said, you know, Rachel was a Washington Redskins cheerleader, and, you know, she would, you know, when she was deployed, she would be sent out, you know, out of her perimeter to go and gather information from the women, because the men couldn't, the male soldiers couldn't, and she had to go without, you know, her body armor, without her helmet, out to try to, you know, gather intel. And I think that, yeah, it's, you know, somebody said to me that a woman 8 months ago came up to me and said, "This is the best feminist film ever made." And I was like, I looked at her and I didn't understand what she meant. And I think it's just because, you know, we celebrate beauty in this film, and we also celebrate their strength. And I think sometimes people are afraid of celebrating beauty and sexuality and femininity because, you know, people won't take you seriously. But these women have raised their right hand and offered to die for our country. And so this competition is their opportunity, you know, after they've served in the military, where, you know, can't wear fingernail polish, you can't smile, you can't flirt, you can't color your hair, you can't have sex on deployment, you know, you can't take your kids with you. And they basically come home, and this competition allows them to feel beautiful again and share stories with their sisters in arms when a lot of times they come back from deployment and they feel alone and they feel shame. And so this really gives them an opportunity to bond and to heal.
Well, and you mentioned not being allowed to have sex. I thought one of the funniest things in the film is how the women dealt with that. And actually, in the military, that's illegal. And I thought it was just an absolute hoot. But then on the opposite side of that same coin, that I think it was Tanya or Hope Garcia, that as part of her talent and part of her problems in getting out of the military was, what do they call it, military sexual trauma, MST?
Yes.
And the piece she gave, honestly, everybody was in tears. And then some others who never talked about their experiences talked about it. And and this woman is drop dead gorgeous. I mean, she really.
Yes, she is. Yeah,
and also in a competition, we see the sisterhood, if you will, because she's homeless and she's got two kids and she can't have her kids even with her. But there, she's a month from having no place to live. And so she's doing anything almost she can to survive. So she does this pretty amazing shoots as models. And she's almost kicked out of the competition. But the toughness that, you know, the two women, you know, talked to her about that and why did she do that? And then an added thing, you find out that her mother, who is very extraordinary, was sexually assaulted as a girl, you know, by her father. And so we follow that story, and it is just, and it's just one after another. It is so powerful, their eventual reconciliation. What extraordinary women the both of them are.
Yeah, I mean, I think people, when they see that reunion, there isn't a dry eye anywhere. And I think that what makes it so special for me as a filmmaker is that, you know, we knew that her mother wanted to come to Vegas to support her daughter. And we knew that they hadn't seen each other in 5 years. And it was so important for us to capture that moment. And I have to say that's one of my favorite scenes in the film because it means so much to me to have reunited them. And I don't know if you know, but both Hope and her mother suffered from childhood sexual trauma and also domestic abuse as adults. And sadly, Hope's mother was murdered last July by her boyfriend. So, you know, there is no silver lining with murder, but the cycle of abuse has stopped with Hope's children, and we were devastated when we lost Cindy because she had become a member of our family, and we, you know, it was so sad that she continued to suffer from domestic abuse, and if this could be a lesson to anyone, it's, you know, just leave. But, you know, it was really sad, and we did put a card up at the end of the film with Cindy's picture, and because she was so special to us, and having her and Hope come together during the film, and having Hope be able to look back at that scene, you know, as a memory of her mother, just means so much to me, and I'm just so honored that I was able to give it to her.
Well, you know, I can understand why the woman said to you that's one of the most powerful feminist films she's ever seen. It's not like any film I have seen, and she's absolutely right, the strength that these women show. But also, they are very much women living in lives that a lot of women are living, and they're not in the military. And how they're dealing with it with humor and gracefulness, but also the importance of the bonding and, if you will, the sisterhood. And I'm just thrilled that you're following up on these women because I want to know what they're doing, how they're doing, and, you know, because it really their stories are our stories.
Well, I think during filming, in order for me to sort of earn their trust, which was not easy, you know, we became family, and we became sisters, and so just, you know, I followed them for 2.5 years. So, you know, when the cameras turn off and you go into the editing room, that bond doesn't end. So we're still in each other's lives, and I still hear from them all the time, and, you know, we're still a family. And it just, you know, as a documentarian, I think it's probably breaking the rules, but there was no way I could just walk away from filming and say, bye, girls, you know, I'm going off to my next project. It was, you know, I will love them for the rest of my life, and I'm just so humbled and honored that they let me into their circle and let me tell their stories.
Well, you're a lucky woman because I'm serious. They really are extraordinary women, and I just could not believe the stories and their strengths. And so, again, this I think it's perfect to be shown on this Memorial Day weekend.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, and again, it's going to be on Independent Lens Monday night, and it's 10 o'clock WEDU, and then I believe it's going to be up on the web Independent Lens website the following day, but I'm not sure of that. Is that true, too?
I think it is.
Yeah, I think the May 28th. But anyway, Lisa, really, I want to thank you, Lisa Hesloff, for making this movie and Independent Lens for airing it. And is there anything you wanted to cover that we didn't mention?
No, I just wanted to thank you so much for having me on, and thank you so much for being so incredibly excited about it, and I can't wait for people to see it, and I hope you like it.
Oh, I hope they do too, because it is really well worth seeing. I'm really humbled by those women, their strength and what they put up with and what they do. It's the perfect movie for Memorial Day weekend. So anyway, Lisa, thank you so much for doing the film.
Again, it's going to be Monday night on WEDU, 10 o'clock, and it's Serve Like a Girl. And there were so many other stories that we didn't get to, but one is really, really powerful. The one who is, I believe her name is Marissa Strzok, and she is kind of the MC for the event. And Marissa is the one you heard in the trailer saying, what did they think we were doing over, you know, in Afghanistan, that she actually was a truck driver, and unfortunately, the truck ran over an IED, and she and the translator were the only ones that survived, but she lost both of her feet. And so she loves shoes, and I thought it was so illustrative of these women that she said she always wore a size 11. And she said, you know, you can't get the really great pumps and heels, she said, with that big of a foot. So when they asked her, what size foot do you want for her prosthesis, she said a 9. And actually, with a prosthesis, she can't wear heels, and she loves them. She said, some people use drugs, I buy shoes. And she's got all these, and she loves the sparkly and the glitter shoes, etc. And to give you an idea, Nicole, if you remember in the interview, is the one who lost her father tragically, who was murdered, has started a petition and raised money. And so Johns Hopkins now is making special prostheses, not only for Marissa, but for some other women veterans who have lost their feet. And so they can wear heels. And so it's just one of the many, many aspects of that film. And it really, I'm serious, it really is extraordinary. And so, Arlene, do you have anything you want to say?
Just that I agree with you. It's an extraordinary film, and I'm looking forward to watching it in full on Monday.
And do you have any announcements you want to make?
Actually, I think I made it at the beginning.
Oh, okay. Well, have a great Memorial Day weekend, and be safe. I hope it doesn't rain out all your events. As I said earlier, actually, that the soundtrack for Serve Like a Girl is really amazing. Lisa Perry has done a fabulous job putting it together. But also that she co-wrote with Pat Benatar this marvelous kind of anthem, Saved from the Wreckage. And this is kind of one of the main themes of that film. So let's give a listen to Pat Benatar and Saving the Wreckage. And again, you have been listening to WMNF Tampa, Sarasota, Clearwater, Community Conscious Radio, and just keep it on WMNF all the time. And, Arlene, go ahead.
I might mention that one of our listeners has contacted us and asked you to cover the Russia situation more. So I just thought I'd pass that on, not related to today's show, but certainly to our world today.
You know, Saris, yeah, because actually we covered Russia before the election with McKellen, the lawyer in New York, that really was trying to bring emphasis to the Russian connection with Trump and Trump Enterprises for years. I've hesitated because, frankly, it's so detailed, and we only have 54 minutes, but we'll do our best. Because it is critical, and the challenges to this democracy, to me, from the get-go, you couldn't have anything much more serious in a way to attack a nation than to affect its election. And there was so much known before, and now we're finding out even at the FBI, the CIA level, but also before there was so much known about those connections. And anyway, and this Memorial Day, we got to fight. Lincoln's right, you know, to see whether this nation, this government of, for, and by the people will survive. But anyway, let's go out with Pat Benatar. Thank you.
left behind. Hallelujah, hallelujah. I was raised to always hold my head up high.